her experience of having a child with special needs. And guess what? Julie and Emily Rose are back in the studio. What?
We're back.
They're back. So, yay. We're so excited. And Miss Naya has joined us. Want to say something, Naya? Okay, she said no. I hope anybody heard that. But she chose the intro song tonight that she is going to let me intro, which is The Passenger, Let Her Go. So we're going to get started right after this song.
Well, you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go. Of your glass, hoping one day you'll make a dream last. But dreams come slow and they go so fast. You see it when you close your eyes. Maybe one day you'll understand why everything you touch surely dies. But you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. Staring at the ceiling in the dark. Same old empty feeling in your heart. Cause love comes slow and it goes so fast. Well, you see her when you fall asleep, but never to touch and never to keep. Cause you loved her too much and you dive too deep. Well, you only need the light when it's burning low.
Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by the 2015 Lake Oroville 4th of July fireworks. The public is invited to join Destination America for this year's Red, White, and You free 4th of July celebration at the Oroville Dam. The party starts at 4 p.m. with music, food, and family activities. Fireworks start at 9:30. For more information, visit and like Lake Oroville Fireworks on Facebook or call 538-2542.
Burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you feel.
All right, this is Love in the 21st Century, and as promised, we are going to be talking about love and family again. We are talking about family members with different abilities. I personally have grown up with this experience, so I'm very excited to be having a show to talk about the experience of what it looks like when you have a family member that has a different ability and how it really is a reflection of the entire family. It's something that happens to the whole family. It's not something that is just isolated to an individual. So I'm really excited, Emily, Rebecca, that you joined us tonight.
Nice to be here.
So Emily is a friend of mine who is a mother of a child with special needs. So Emily, would you introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners and tell them a little bit about your personal life experience?
Yes, I will. I'm a mother of three kids, and my oldest is 10. I have a 6-year-old and a 1-year-old. And I live here in Butte County, outside of Oroville. And my oldest has cerebral palsy from lack of oxygen when he was in the womb. So it's, you know, my journey in parenting began with him. And so I learned to be a parent from him. And, you know, I think that being a parent with a special needs kid is, for me, it's actually a blessing because it has brought up so many things for me in who I am and things that I can work on in myself that, you know, I didn't have to really think about with my more typical developing children. And yeah, there's a lot that is different with a family that has to think about someone's needs. But it can also really teach you how to be an awesome human if we, you know, let that opportunity happen. So
yeah, I would agree that I've had that similar relation, that there are certain aspects of yourself that maybe are that are enhanced because you are aware of somebody else's needs more early on, or just, you know, in that process of development. Are there ones that stick out for you, Emily?
For me, just you know, putting someone else's needs before mine, you know, that's any mother or any parent, any caregiver. But for my son, you know, he never really knew himself as having, you know, abilities that, you know, now we kind of can see, okay, he can't do this, he can't do that. But for him, he's just who he is. And so that's been a big teacher for me to not look to impose those things on him that he's not doing yet, but just, you know, seeing him as he sees himself, which is just this person in the world. And I think it's easy for us to fixate on what's not working and what's wrong with someone and the problem and the disability. And over the decade of, you know, being his mom, I'm really learning to connect with him and look at what he is all about and who he is versus looking for ways to fix him.
Is there certain things that, like, in your own process of being being a mother of a child with special needs that has sort of transpired? So, like, where you were when you first gave birth and your personal experience with finding out that you had a child that had special needs and where you are now in that process?
Well, yeah, lots of things have transpired. it's a big question. I would say that at first I didn't really know that he had special needs. In the truest sense, I mean, we knew he had a big injury to his brain, and we were in the NICU for 17 days, and there was a lot of, you know, issues with him, but then he sort of was just a normal baby after that. And, you know, I don't know if it was fortunate or what, but the doctors that we dealt with didn't really give us any diagnosis or ideas about the future. They just said, we'll just wait and see. So I didn't have any of that kind of weighing over me. I just was like, okay, well, this is who he is. And then as he got older, it was clear that, you know, there was some stuff that was going on. But I think that initial time of just having a baby and he was just home and he learned how to nurse and, you know, I kind of didn't hold on to like, oh no, my dreams are shattered. Like, you know, I didn't really have that from the beginning. So that was, I think, a gift. But I mean, each day brings a new challenge for everybody. And I think as he's gotten older, some things I've learned are just like that we really have to take it one day at a time. And what can we win at today? You know, what can be successful for him today? And so I think I've let go of a lot of expectations about how he should be and how I should be and how, you know, my partner should be or my other kids in relation to him. And I think, you know, letting go of those expectations has been real freeing and allowing, you know, us to have an easier life because no one really likes too many expectations on them.
Absolutely not.
It sounds really presencing, taking it one day at a time.
Yeah.
Rather than getting caught up in what will be.
And I think sometimes it's so overwhelming, you know, caring for someone that's very dependent. And of course, there's so many different ways in which someone needs care, but that's really the way to get through it, is to really just take it one day at a time, to know that the end of the day is your finish line, and that's just where you need to get to. And I know from friends that also have, you know, children with issues that, you know, sometimes that's all you can do, is just get through the day. And I think for me, the ways in which I've learned to just be present with him and slow down and take time with him have really, you know, transformed the way I parent and the way I am with any relationship.
What resources have you found to be really valuable?
Well, mostly community, mostly other parents, you know, people that are going through down a similar path. And like Tammy was saying, there's a lot of people with different abilities in the world, and most people have someone in their life that, you know, is a little bit different. We're all a little different, but that might need a little extra care. And, you know, reaching out to people in your life and asking for help. There's great groups on Facebook and of, you know, certain like issues or diseases, or, you know, where people get together, they discuss what works for them, what doesn't. You know, there's like swap meets for equipment and things like that. I find that Facebook's a great way to connect with other people that might be going through something similar. And in the last 3 years, we've been using the ABM method with Rigzin. I'm training, and now I'm an ABM practitioner, and that method has been helping him immensely and our family. So we can talk more about that later.
Yeah. Before we get into talking about ABM, I want you to reference a book that we talked about before. I'm not sure if you remember. I have a friend that had a child that was premature, mm-hmm. and had to be in an incubator, or mm-hmm. What did you call it?
The NICU is the neo-intensive care unit. So.
Right. And you were mentioning that though there might not be, you know, signs at the beginning, that there's certain developmental milestones that you can look for. And there was a particular book that you referenced. Do you remember what that book was?
Mm-hmm. It's called Kids Beyond Limits, and it's written by Anat Bagnell. And I read it for the first time when Rigzin was 7, and it pretty much changed our life. It's incredibly useful for any person that's looking to do better in the world, and especially for someone that's caring for another person that has challenges. We all have challenges. So she actually wrote another book called Move Into Life, which is not based towards kids. But I'll say the name again. It's Kids Beyond Limits. And it's really easy to read, and it really gives you some skills, some ways to connect with the person, the kid that you're looking to care for. It's a great resource, like for teachers, anyone that, you know, has kids in their life. And yeah, it's basically a way of shifting from the, you know, the sort of Western model of like fixing the problem, like looking at the person and saying, oh, you've got something going on, we need to fix you. And really connecting with who they are. And so it's pretty transformational, and it's really changed my family and my dynamic with my kids, to not look at them when they need help or they're acting out or they're having a challenge, to not look to fix that.
Right. I'm reminded of the conversation that Kelly Munson and I were having last week about that, of that cultivating that wild uniqueness of your children. And so that applying that to your child, whether they have special needs or not, like just meeting your child where they're at instead of trying to create them into a mold that you've already designed for them to be. And I'm really appreciative that you're stressing the importance of utilizing Facebook for, you know, the system that it really can be, is really connecting people that are in maybe what would can seem like isolated experiences, because you might not know a neighbor that has cerebral palsy. You might not, for my particular situation, know somebody that also has Parkinson's, like my father. But when you start to reach out and utilize those social medias to build those communities, you can feel and get information from people that are in similar places and similar experiences in life. And like you said, the swap meets, like that's amazing. Like, you know, that equipment's got to be really expensive, you know. Mm-hmm. And like for most families, how can you afford to have, you know, equipment, either new equipment or replaced equipment. So creating those means, looking for it on Facebook. Is there any tips that you could give somebody how to, like, start even searching that on Facebook, like, that would be in a similar situation?
I think I would start with just searching for, like, the specific, maybe, I don't know if it's a diagnosis or, you know, what's specific to your family and what you're thinking, you know, the group of people that you might want to connect with. I know there's a lot of groups. There's a Butte Special Needs Families Facebook group. I just posted on there recently asking about dentists, like recommending a dentist that works good with kids. And a lot of people responded and just gave me their input, their experience. I don't know, just searching for, you know, do you have a kid with, you know, this or that, or you have a person with a certain thing, and then maybe, you know, just more general, like, you know, Butte County Disabled, or, you know, even go outside of the county and outside of the your realm, because there's people all over the country that are going through whatever I'm going through and what you're going through. Like, there's other people out there dealing with it in their own way, and that's what's so cool about the internet, is it can connect us together, and, you know, we can ask questions to each other and, you know, have feedback. So
absolutely. I know that you mentioned earlier, and of course I know where you live because you're my friend, but you live in a rural part of Butte County, which could be a, you know, stressful situation for somebody that has a child that has a special need, or anybody really that has a disability living further away from resources, which I want to get into later in the show about what resources that may be available in Chico, but that's in Chico if you live here. So I'm wondering, like, what your perspective is on your experience being in a rural place versus, which I know that you go to the city for the trainings that we're going to talk about, but, like, what has been, you know, maybe the challenges and opportunities for that and for your family?
I would say that the challenges for us is that, you know, Rigson's in a chair most of the time, and so we don't have cement, we don't have just smooth surface for him to roll around on, and so getting him from place to place is a little more challenging, and we have to, you know, have different equipment. I can't just have a regular wheelchair for him outside, and I hike him up and down hills and things like that, so there's some, like, just more strenuous work that is done, but I think... I mean, for me, I think it's really, you know, I have to have a car. I have to spend money on gas to get to services, to get to do things. And so that's another challenge. But that's really for anyone that lives out in the boonies. But, you know, my kids get to grow up in the woods. And I think that surpasses in, you know, in benefit. And we have a very small school system. So he goes to public school. He's able to have an IEP where... he, you know, gets whatever he needs. So I can go in and, you know, it is a small school, so it's awesome to have that community that know him, love him, and want to meet his needs and meet my needs. So I think, you know, living, you know, sort of out there and the community is small, it actually can be a benefit. But it also depends on your resources. Like, if, you know, you don't have the resources to travel, you know, somewhere more urban to do a specialized, you know, therapy or some kind of special thing that you're looking for, or if your kid has more dire, like, medical needs and you have to, you know, maybe go to the hospital a lot, you know, then that would be even more challenging. So it's really specific to each, you know, each person and the kind of support they have. If you have a big family that's on your team and they're, like, willing to drive you around and take you places, then that's different than maybe, like, an elderly person with some challenges that doesn't have anyone around them. And so maybe living out there would be a lot more tough.
Absolutely. Can you let our listeners know what an IEP is?
An IEP is an individualized education plan. And so there's a million reasons why a kid might be granted that, but it means that the school district is responsible for, you know, giving them services that they need specific to whatever challenges they have, learning challenges or, you know, physical challenges, whatever's going on for them. And so then the school has to provide either an aid or, you know, special circumstances for that kid.
Right. I mean, that's an extreme asset in the public school system, which is kind of like a streamlined system for producing, you know, good students. So an IEP is really a good tool for parents out there that might have a child that's having some challenges to look into, because it's an opportunity to kind of specialize the education that your child's receiving and getting their needs met. You know, a lot of children out there that have behavioral issues could benefit from IEPs as well, and that didn't even know that schools do that individualized education program.
Mm, okay. Plan
is something that is an asset. We were talking a little bit about the appropriate language around, before we came on air, about talking about somebody that has a different ability, you know, which commonly referred to as disability. We've been referring to Riggs as a child with special needs. And it's a good question, you know, like, what is the more appropriate words to use? Do you have a preference as in, you know, what it's referred to? Do you have maybe an insight into what other parents or people that are in that position would prefer the language to be called?
I can't speak on behalf of other parents because I know people are more sensitive than I am, and it's kind of a personal issue. I know, you know, it just depends on how sensitive you are. But I would say that, you know, non-typical or special needs or differently abled, those are all fairly safe. As far as my preference, I don't really have one. I don't, you know, people don't really offend me in that region because most people are at least slightly tactful when they talk about Rigson or talk right. to him. I think it's more just, you know, kids or just not in a bad way, but ignorance of just not knowing what to say or what to do. Sometimes people might say, "What's wrong with him?" or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that would be maybe like language that would be a little more offensive. But as far as labeling him, I mean, sometimes people just, you know, I could just say he has cerebral palsy, you know, and that maybe needs an explanation too about what that is. But I don't know. It's kind of a hard question because people have different preferences of what words make them feel okay or not okay.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think that that is, it applies in this situation and it applies in other situations, which we're in this place of trying to figure out what is the most appropriate, harmless words to use with people that have, you know, what people prefer to be called, whether that's, you know, people that belong to the LGBTQ population, you know, mm-hmm. like what they prefer to be called, you mm-hmm. know, people that are differently abled, people that have, that identify as a different race. Like, we're in this place in the world right now where we're trying to figure out how do we say things without being offended or offending others and being politically correct, but also not have to like continuously be spending so much time thinking about it because it almost derives away from the point of what we're talking about.
That's what I've faced a lot of. I have a lot of fear around what words to use because in my mid-30s, you know, what's politically correct for any of those categories, you know, has changed. Right. So many times. And so that was my first question to Emily when we sat down out in the lobby together, like, okay, so what are the appropriate words to use here, you know?
Yes.
I think that's the best thing to do is just to ask. And if mm-hmm. you're in a situation with another human that you're talking with and you're not sure, mm-hmm. then just ask them. Like, I'm just wondering what you prefer I say about that, or do you even care? Because I don't want to offend you. And there's such a genuineness there. Like, you're connecting with that person. You're letting them know where you're at and that you're thinking of their well-being, of their, you know.
And even if I were to mess up, you know, my intention would be to, like, not
right
be offending.
Because someone might say, well, you know, actually, that is a sensitive subject for me, and I prefer you say this. Mm-hmm. And then you just know, and then the conversation's over.
Communication.
Hey, how simple is that? Right. I think it's important what you're referencing, Emily, Rebecca, is that, you know, it's different for every family, because even when we're having this conversation, I'm thinking of my father, and maybe the reference for the person individually, whether they were able or not before, because disability is usually referenced typically historically to somebody that was able-bodied, meaning they were able physically to do something differently than they are once they become disabled, whether they become, like, were in a car accident or had an illness that took over their lives. So in their sense, they don't feel differently able. They feel like something has been taken from them.
Mm.
So there's a lot of different contexts to be, you know, it's hard to use a blanket word to describe the people in the various different groups. So it's really important, like you said, to bring up that element about communication, which it will segue nicely into talking about communication in your family and how that plays out in terms of meeting the needs of Rigson as well as of other people in the family.
Yeah, I think, that's the most important thing in any relationship is communication. And when you have kids, that magnifies again. And, you know, with Rigson, he doesn't speak exactly like you and I. You know, he says yes and no, and he can now type out sentences and really be clear with what he wants. But there's been a lot of years where he didn't really speak, and certainly not in a way that other people would understand him. So communication's always been at the forefront of my world with him and my family, trying to understand each other. And I think having that challenge there with him, where we want to know what he's thinking and feeling, because he's totally brilliant and, you know, cognitively on par with his age. And so you know that he's thinking stuff, you know, there's stuff going on for him, but we're not able to understand him as well. And that has taught me just the how powerful language is and how important it is, and the fact that I can use it. So I better use it well, and I better use it with other people in my life. And so, you know, like we were talking about, just asking, you know, just asking people what they need or how they are, and not being attached to, you know, what they're going to say, mm-hmm. and not being offended by it. It's that plays out all the time in my home life, where I'm checking in and wanting to know, okay, you know, with my daughter that's six, like, you know, if she's having a hard time, you know, playing with Rigson, or she cares for him a lot, so maybe she needs a break from that. But I have to ask her how she's feeling. I have to check in with her and communicate that, and not make assumptions. And so, you know, having a kid that doesn't just say what he wants, I think has highlighted that for me, that how valuable that communication is. And sometimes we just go about our life and grumble inside, or not say what we need to say. And so us communicating, me communicating, you know, my needs to my partner or to my kids or to my friends or support, that's just as important as, you know, asking others in my life, like, what's going on with them in the moment. Because we, you know, otherwise, how do I know?
Absolutely. And talking about communication and how you personally would want to be supported, do you have any suggestions or tips for people on what areas of, like, self-care and communication can be met? Like, how for you would like to be supported as a parent?
I would say that having other parents, other, you know, my mama friends, and just having a community of people that are close enough that I can communicate with them, talk with them about, you know, my day, my life, my week, what's going on, that is such a huge piece of self-care for me. And of course, you know, I do that with my partner, where we can talk about what's going on with our parenting strategies. But it's really about saying it out loud and saying where I'm at in the day. And when it's hard, you know, when you have a hard day, when I have a hard day with my kids and I'm losing it, I do better if I can talk about that later.
Absolutely.
So adult time.
Yeah, adult time. Adult time is important. And also knowing that sometimes I'm not going to get it, and that's okay too. And so there's this, you know, it's a funny balance of sort of accepting, you know, that I choose to be a parent. I choose to do that 100%. And so sometimes I'm not going to get that time. And that's a commitment that I've made. So I'm going to stand by my word that I'm doing that. And, you know, the thing is, kids actually do grow up, and that time will change. And then I can be committed to a different aspect of parenting. So I do fall back on that, that idea that, you know, I'm doing this now, and sometimes I'm not getting enough support, and I just know, okay, I'm gonna look for that support, like, in a couple days or next week. I'm gonna reach out, because I know I need that, and I know that it just can't happen always in the moment.
It almost sounds like in that way you're supporting yourself, like, if you're not able to get the support from the people around you, but you made this commitment to yourself to be a parent for this time, you've made peace with the fact that you might not feel supported at all times, and in that, you're supporting your mission, kind of?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like how you worded that.
I have some questions about the family dynamic a little bit. In what ways have you seen either yours or your partner's personality in Rigson, you know, kind of shining through in ways that you're like, oh, that was he did that because of you?
Well, we got a lot of stubbornness in Rigson. He's very
who does that come from?
I'd say both of us. Yeah, it's interesting with him because I sometimes wonder how much of who, you know, we all are born with a personality and mm-hmm. we just are who we are. And then also our experience and our where how we grew up affects us. And so for him, from day one, he, you know, had this, you know, we all have injuries in our life. His was on day one, you know, and so that has also shaped his personality. And so one of my big reasons for having another more than one kid was thinking, wow, like he is not going to know. He's just going to kind of be the prince, mm-hmm. you know, so he's got a little princely way about him.
Don't all first kids.
Yeah. And he's very when you're dependent on others, I feel like it's a natural sort of thing that happens. Like, that's just who he is. That's what he knows of himself. That's his experience, is that he needs others to care for him. So, but, you know, sometimes I act like that. Sometimes my husband acts like that. And I don't know if it's from us. I mean, his sense of humor is definitely his papa's. He's got a great sense of humor. That's and awesome. He's a trickster and he's very silly. But that's also growing up in a house that a lot of silly stuff happens, you know? So
What's that movie?
Wow.
The movie with the there's a movie just came out. It's in the theaters right now with the brain.
Inside Out.
Inside Out. Have you seen that movie?
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. I highly recommend Inside Out.
5 stars.
Naya's seen it, apparently. Isn't it awesome? Yes. No. Oh, no, she says funny. It's not that funny. I really
I'm also curious how your 6-year-old has kind of stepped up in ways unexpectedly, you know, to help you in mm-hmm. care.
Well, it's that personality thing. She's incredibly compassionate as a person, and I think that being born into a family where, you know, your sibling just is already there, they're already established in the family, and they are like they are, right? And so you don't really get a choice in that. You don't get to see them, you know, become who they are. It's like they're already there. So for her, she's just grown up, like, taking care of him. Because that's just what we do. That's just what happens, is we get him stuff and we, you know, we bring stuff over to him or whatever because he can't physically walk over there. And so, you know, that's just what's normal for her.
I like, you keep bringing it back to that. And I really like that. You know, that what's normal for Rigson is what's normal for Rigson. And
exactly.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And that's how it is for your family, and that's how it is for all of us. And yet, we all look from the outside in mm-hmm. and create expectations or have ideas of the way things should be. And so it's like, oh, well, maybe that's affecting, you know, this person this way. But really, it's just their life, your daughter's life.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I do think that there would be, you know, challenging as a parent, though, because though it is normal for Cedra and for Alara as she grows up, that their brother has special needs. That it is different for the parents because they maybe had a different experience themselves yeah. growing up, as well as the children get older. I mean, I was really appreciative about the stressing of the communication, because growing up in a house where somebody, that my father did have a disability, we didn't talk about it. It was prevalent and aware. I mean, we all knew it was happening, but it wasn't a conversation that we ever had. And so it was challenging to exist in the world knowing that this was happening but not having anybody to talk to about it. So really, like, stressing that communication with your children and with your partners is really important. But also, that's going to change and metamorphose as she gets older, as they mm-hmm. both get older, that they realize that no, not all families are like this. So it is good to be starting that communication now and to be checking in with each other's needs, like you said, like making sure that they all feel like they're getting their needs met first as well, like that they're not necessarily going above and beyond solely because their brother needs something, but because they want to be doing it, like you said, checking in with Cedra to see if she is, you know, if she's enjoying what she's doing playing with him, or she's just doing it because she feels like she has to, you know what I
yeah.
mean?
Yeah. She's sick, so she doesn't do too many things.
She does
what she wants. But there was a time when she was little, you know, when she asked, You know, mm-hmm. why does he not walk? You know, she was old enough. I don't know, maybe she was like 3 or whatever when she's starting to, she knows this is normal, but then she's seeing other kids and she's part of the other world outside of our family. And so, you know, and so of course we just, you know, described to her what happened when he was a baby. And so now she's actually become an advocate for him. Whereas when kids or people ask about him, when they're in a social group with other kids, kids will ask her, why is your brother in the chair? And she'll just rattle off her little explanation like nobody's business. And because to her, it's just yeah. normal. Yeah. Just this is how it is. And there's nothing good or bad about it. It's just, this is his story. And he likes to throw sticks and he likes these kind of movies. And so I think, you know, for people that are listening that maybe don't have someone really close to them with disabilities, and I find a lot of people don't know what to say. They don't know, like, the wording, like we were talking about before. And my advice would be, like, don't focus on that. Like, connect with the person. There's always something there that you can connect with the person about that's not their injury, their problem, their disability. There's always, I mean, even if it's just on the street, like, I like your hat, or, you know, it's just there's always a place. And so when kids ask me questions about Riggs, and you know, I'll always bring in that stuff. Like, sometimes it's good to answer their question, and you know, so they can understand him, but also say, like, you know, do you like this movie? Like, this is his favorite movie right now, you know, and connect the two people together. Like, oh yeah, we really are on the same planet here together, and you do like the things I like. And I think that's a really important part of treating everybody.
Absolutely. So if you're just tuning in, this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. You're listening to Love in the 21st Century, and we are talking about love and family again, when family members with different abilities. Miss Emily Rebecca has joined us to talk about her personal experience of a mother of 3 with one son that has a different ability, hence special needs. And we're going to be talking here soon about ABM, which I'm not going to even begin to try to say the name. Emily, will you?
A not Bunyell method.
And we're going to be talking a little bit more about that and how it's been a tool in her life and how it can be an asset to anyone out there that has special needs, or also just for anybody that's in this similar situation. So stay tuned. Call in if you have a comment to add, 895-1114, or message us on the Facebook page. We'll be doing our best to get those comments on the air.
Wow, exclaimed a beaming Donald Trump as he stepped on stage, basking in the cheers of a throng attending his launch into the 2016 presidential race. That is some group of people, he gushed, thousands. It was a showbiz extravaganza, literally. The crowd was cheering the self-promoting hypester who wants to be president, but not necessarily supporting him. That's because some of these over-the-top enthusiasts were actors. Yes, hired at $50 a pop to do a 3-hour gig as Donnie's crowd. Extra Mile Casting had been retained to puff up the audience. We are looking to cast people for the event to wear T-shirts and carry signs and help cheer him, said Extra Mile in an email to its list of actors who work as extras in films, TV shows, etc. When the Donald Show was over, the extras dumped their signs in the trash and went to their next acting gig. For his part, Trump delivered a rambling, almost incoherent 40-minute rant. Citing his chief qualification for the highest office in our land, he said, I'm really rich. And by the way, I'm not even saying that in a braggadocious. That's the kind of thinking you need for this country. And his immigration policy is simply, well, simplistic. I would build a great wall, and nobody builds walls better than me, believe me. Wow, apparently he intends to build the wall himself. Then he added a jingoistic gringoism to this good neighbor policy, declaring, and I'll have Mexico pay for that wall. And what's his economic policy, you ask? It's a whopper. I will be the greatest jobs president God ever created, he bellowed. This is Jim Hightower saying, no, no, Donnie, don't even try to blame God for creating you or your nuttiness. You truly are a self-made man, spawned from the fumes of your own gaseous ego. Yet, you're a godsend for those of us seeking comic relief in politics.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
All right, if you're just tuning in, this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, and we are Love in the 21st Century, talking with Miss Emily Rebecca. Emily, Rose, and Julian are here as well.
As well.
Yay. And we are talking about families with different abilities. So we were just talking about Emily's, Emily Rebecca, not Emily Rose, experience with having a son that has cerebral palsy. And so I would like to start talking about more the ABM method and how, when you first started getting going with that and what it is, so that some of our listeners might find out what this tool is.
Okay. So it was about 3 years ago. Actually, I believe Anat came on KZFR and was interviewed, but she released her book, Kids Beyond Limits. And so I had heard her name, and I picked up her book, and it basically goes through these 9 essential tools of how to, you know, reconnect to ourselves and turn our brain on to be a really learning brain. And I don't think I was even a few chapters in. It made so much sense to me. It was so much of a better idea, all her ideas, than what I had already experienced through all the different kinds of therapies and things that we've tried with Riggs and over the years. I just went ahead and, you know, booked us for some lessons and not really knowing what to expect. And then before he even went down for his lessons, I actually did a workshop with her. And I had my own real transformation doing that workshop. When basically there's 2 ways to access the ABM, and one is through a lesson where a practitioner would guide you through movements with their hands, and the other one would be verbally instructed movement. So you would just lay on the floor and be instructed through movement.
Like yoga?
Not like yoga, but basically, you know, no one's touching you, so you're having your own experience. You're not being, you know, you're not on a table getting moved around.
I guess that's kind of what I'm just trying to correlate it to something.
Through doing those TMLs, which are the ones where someone's talking you through it, I had such a big change in my own body, you know, after just a small 45-minute lesson of hardly really moving at all, I thought. I mean, it's so gentle. There's no, it's not about stretching or forcing or exercising in any way. And so for me, it really was like, whoa, what's going on then? What, my brain is here with me and it's doing something. You know, I had a huge range of basically flexibility change from that lesson after pretty much, you know, just laying flat on my back and moving my arm a little bit. And I got up and felt so different. And it was really profound for me to notice, wow, like this, I feel so different now. So anyway, it started my whole process of taking Riggs into lessons. And so he was about 7 and a half, a little over 7. And, you know, he'd been working on sitting up and, you know, walking and doing all kinds of things his whole life. He'd been, you know, put into these positions he couldn't be in, and he'd been asked to do the things he couldn't do yet. So, and we've had amazing people in his life, you know, working with him, and it was never really about the personal relationship between him and maybe his therapist or people that were helping him, but the school of thought behind it, which was to focus on what was wrong with him in someone else's mind. You know, to him, there's nothing wrong with him anyway. So what ABM did was really look at his whole self and not look at what he couldn't do, but look to see what he could do. And so basically I'll say, I'll try to articulate what ABM is. And it's basically using the basis of neuroplasticity, of brain plasticity, to look for ways to organize the brain better, create new pathways, get the neurons up and going, you know, upgrade our own system. And so, you know, our brain does everything for us. It certainly doesn't just move us physically. It's how we think and how we have emotions and everything we do in the world, whether we feel joy or sorrow, like our brain is in charge of that. And so upgrading our brain, that upgrades everything, or it has the potential to. And so one of the most prominent things, there's a lot of things that change with Riggs and right away. Of course, I started the process looking to support him. not looking to support myself. But he, within about a month of going down there and getting a few lessons from experienced practitioners a couple times a week, he all of a sudden was able to sit up at 7.5. And, you know, he does it in his own way. He doesn't look like you or I. He has parts of his body that aren't mapped the same because of his brain damage. But it was like, it was a miracle. You know, all of a sudden he has freedom to sit and play and do his own thing, and he doesn't have to be supported by something. And a lot of things with his behavior changed. He got a lot happier. He got a lot less frustrated. Mm. You know, his speaking improved. And it was all, like, really fast. Mm. And, you know, he was 7.5. And most people would say that was, you're done at that point. You know, you've already gone through all the time when your brain is plastic and you're old now. But that's not the case. The brain is amazing. And it can be turned on and connected to at any age. So
is the Anat Banyel method specifically for people with different abilities, or is it just
not at all?
It's
for everyone.
Method?
It's okay. For everyone. And basically, for myself, like, I wouldn't have considered myself having any disabilities, but having done the lessons and been in the training. You know, I used to get back pain when I would drive for long periods of time. That just completely disappeared. You know, the way I'm able to, you know, choose my thoughts and my words and how I relate with my partner and my kids, my ability to really have control over my intentionality in my world has changed quite a bit. And, I mean, I have seen many different people have incredible outcomes in all different ways. So it's really for anybody, because we can all do better in something. And, you know, there isn't any... Everyone has a brain that I know. And all
yes,
those
for the
brains
most part.
can be upgraded. I mean, that's a beautiful thing. That's what they're built for.
So is there a special class for special needs then? Or?
Well, as far as being trained in the method, then yes, there are special trainings that are dedicated to working with children, and specific, you know, specific diagnoses may, like, you would sort of be thinking in a different mindset towards a, you know, someone with autism or someone, you know. But as far as the method itself, it's a process of connecting with that nervous system, waking up that nervous system, and so it's super specific to that person that you're working with. There's no, like, template of you go in and you do these movements. You know, you see where that person's at.
Cool.
And you interact with them. It's a conversation between the practitioner's nervous system and that other nervous system.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you, Emily, are a practitioner as well.
I did just graduate from the first part of the basic training, and I'm going to continue on with my training with the Children's Mastery, and there's more trainings after that even. So,
are you offering your services here?
I do not have a practice set up, but I'm super open to people contacting me and either getting lessons, or I'd like to get some TML classes going, which would be like a group class of people, you know, doing the verbally instructed movement lessons, and I'm looking to do that in Chico. So I'm not quite, like, ready to practice full time because I'm full time momming. But I would love for people that are interested to, first of all, go to Anat's website. There's amazing YouTube videos of her working with kids with all different issues. And the website's very informative as far as, you know, more articulating the work and how it's done. So, yeah, I'm happy to give out my contact info. And there is another woman in town here in Chico that is a practitioner, and I can give her info as well for anyone that just wants to get more information about it or is interested in doing lessons. I'm super open to that.
So if you're interested in checking it out, the website is www.anatbanyel, AnatBanyel method.com, and that has lots of information about the actual practice and methods of the neuro movement to improve your mind and body. I mean, it makes complete sense that, like, your body would have, you know, stored information in it. And I've experienced some of your trainings that you received, and yeah, they are slight and adjusted movements of your body, but it's really profound in terms of the experiences that you feel, like these shifts in your body, and you know, the information that is stored in those different parts of our body as we move and like allow ourselves more freedom. It's really like almost, it reminds me of like an acupressure or an acupuncture experience where it's just like touching a right nerve ending where it adjusts something. And yeah, I'm curious about, you know, how, what you mentioned about different people coming for different reasons to this method, you know, like whether that be an emotional or physical issue. And I'm wondering what your experience has been about that specifically, emotional, like what different things have people showed up for that they wanted maybe treatment for with this method that is an emotional?
Well, because I'm not practicing as a practitioner, I mean, I can't really speak totally from my own experience as far as people coming to me.
Mm-hmm.
But what I know is that, you know, it's very moving to be connected to. And I think that what ABM is about connecting to ourselves and having another person that's willing to make us feel safe and look like for our best. And what I have found with people that, you know, my classmates that I work with and people that I know that I practice on, is that there's an incredible sense of well-being just having that human connection. And so I think that also when we start to get to know ourselves and feel ourselves and get mindful, you know, a lot of emotions come up and stuff that we didn't necessarily plan on. And I've seen that in my class where people are very moved, people are very emotional about things, and there are certain parts of the body, you know, like the chest or the sternum, and maybe no one's ever touched your sternum, and when someone does, even though it's totally with love, it brings something up. And so there's really, you know, we just don't know what's gonna come out of someone's experience. And the beauty I find of ABM is just that we can look to another person and really not look to know what they're experiencing already or the challenges that they have, but just look to wonder about them, wonder how they are, wonder what's going on for them, and look to, you know, look to improve their life and make them, you know, or help them be the best they can be. But, you know, we can't know what that is for that person. And or for ourselves. Like, I couldn't have guessed my own experiences, my own transformations before they happen. And looking at the way the brain works, it's like we never know. Like, if you look at the way a baby learns to, say, roll over, which is like a, you know, normal baby will get to that point, and that's totally neurologically happening, the development's going along, the baby's never going to, it's not thinking of doing that. It's going to happen, but the end sort of result, not really the end, but that's never going to be, you know, thought of beforehand. It's just sort of happened spontaneously. So when we have a transformation like that, which that's huge, right, from going not moving to rolling over, it's not something we can predict or see coming.
Absolutely. So if people out there are interested in finding out more information, they can check out the notbanalmethod.com. And Emily, you also said you'd give out some other contact information.
Yeah, I'd be happy to give out my phone number and also the phone number of the other practitioner in town here who's awesome. So I'll go ahead and do that. Her name is Rosalie, and her number is 530-809-2686. And she is an experienced practitioner here in Chico doing the ABM method. And my number is area code 831-227-1314. And I encourage anyone listening to go to a Knot site and get more information. And then if you feel like, you know, contacting me or Rosalie and asking questions or just anything, I'm totally open to your contact.
Absolutely. Having someone to just talk about these different tools, as well as talk about, you know, your own experience, is a really big asset. And so I'm glad that you shared the the tools with us about Anat Bunnell's method, as well as giving out your information and letting people know that Facebook can be used as a tool to create that connection as well. You know, utilizing social media for the benefit of getting information out to family members and community members that maybe feel isolated, that there is a lot of resources out there if it's used specifically for that purpose. You can search that information. That was a good tool that you led people to. Thank you for that. And then also the book title,
Kids Beyond Limits. Kids highly, Beyond. Highly recommended.
So Kids Beyond Limits, which is also written by Anat Bunnell. Mm-hmm. So that is something to help, even if you maybe don't feel like your child has any special needs or you're not in a particular position of having special needs, it's a tool that you can, a book that you can begin with to start to maybe look for those things and maybe notice something that you didn't notice before.
And I'd like to just add that the book and the Nine Essentials that she speaks of has really helped me with my other children in incredible ways. And it helps me to be a parent, and I don't think it really has anything to do with, you know, having challenges or not, because just being human is a challenge. And I've learned, you know, my interactions with my other children have been incredibly positively affected by the information in that book. So I recommend it to any parent or teacher or caregiver. And and of course, you know, as I read it, I also, you know, looked to apply it to myself.
Great. Thank you so much, Emily. Rebecca, is there anything, any closing remarks from the two of you?
Thank you for coming. This was great.
Yeah, you're an amazing guest.
Yes.
Thank you.
And Miss Naya, do you want to intro our outro song? She's silently saying no. Okay. Next up is Ecotopia. It's Stephen and Susan Chudy. They're going to be discussing environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. EcoTalk, it's your local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health of our planet. And the song was chosen by Miss Naya. I have no idea about this song, so I cannot intro it. It's called Sia, Chandelier. Anybody else know this song?
Chandelier. Yeah, I know this song.
Is it a good one?
It's a very popular song. You might recognize the video.
Okay, well, we're going to watch the video while you all listen. Hope you have a beautiful night, and we will talk with you next week.
Party girls, don't get hurt, can't feel anything. When will I learn? I push it down, push it down. I'm the one for a good time call. Phone's blowing up, ring on my doorbell. I feel the love, feel the love.
This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Ecotopia, now being broadcast over KCMJ, community-powered radio in Colorado Springs. Tonight, we'll be playing excerpts from the recent speech by environmentalist Bill McKibben here in Chico.
A parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.